Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands, jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubicon.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall, Rubicon's podcast for millennials on a mission to change our planet. And although he actually, are you considered Gen Z?
I technically would be a Gen Zer.
Okay, so millennials and Gen Zs and everybody, today's guest is doing just that. Benji Backer, founder of the American Conservation Coalition, and I'll let you get into all of the good stuff. But Benji, thank you so much for being here.
Well, it's great to be here, and it's always a little bit, I don't know if it's embarrassing or hard to handle, hard to swallow that I'm a Gen Zer, because my whole entire life I grew up thinking that I was a millennial until they changed the dates of when the cutoff was.
And what's so I'm proud now?
The cutoff, I think, is 95, which, you know, I was not born before 1995, so I can't even claim that as even being close. I'm a 97 baby, and I guess in today's terms, that's 2 years into Gen Z.
Yeah, no, you are a real TikTok-ing Gen Z.
I do not have TikTok downloaded. My girlfriend and my friends at work always send me a lot of TikToks, which are great to watch, but I do not have a TikTok, as much as that probably would surprise most people.
No, I mean, you're the youngest guest I've ever had. You're also the first guest that's ever been younger than me. So I'm very excited to do this episode. You know, we are targeted towards millennials, but a lot of times our guests are, you know, more veterans in the field. Not to say that we're not, just to say that we're young and cool. So let's kick things off with an alliteration. I mean, a bit of, and I wrote right here, like Benji Backer background. Walk me through your personal and professional timeline and trajectory. Like, how'd you get here?
Well, the Benji Backer background sounds like the Better Business Bureau. So I like that. And I'm going to use that again. I grew up in Wisconsin and near Green Bay. And you know, I grew up in a place where, in a family specifically, where the environment was not political. But I was very political myself. I was one of the top campaign volunteers in the entire state for numerous years in a row, from ages 10 until I graduated from high school. I ended up moving to Washington State, where I am now. You know, I always felt like, even though I was a conservative political activist, I always was very environmentally conscious. All my projects, you know, when you're told to do a project in middle school or high school, you could choose the topic. I'd always choose environmental topics. I'd always choose environmental classes when we have the choice as an extracurricular class. And so I was always very conservative, but very environmentally minded. And the more I got active in politics, the more I realized, whoa, you know, environmentalism is a very partisan topic. And I'm the anomaly, or at least in most people's eyes, the anomaly. And so when I got to college, you know, I already had this seasoned political background, which was probably, I was probably the only 18-year-old to be able to say that. But I was active for almost half my life at that point. And so I was like, man, I got to do something about this. You know, there's got to be a way to bring conservatives back into environmental conversations, and not only just like the tangible human beings of conservatives, but also the principles of conservatism, which, you know, historically have been limited government, fiscal responsibility, market-based reforms, capitalism, and figuring out how to bring those values back to environmentalism. And so for the first few years of college, I started building what I didn't really know was going to be a massive national grassroots organization for environmental reforms from a market-based perspective, and was just super grateful to have had the political experience that I had and the knowledge that this was a void that needed to be filled. And, you know, we're still filling that void today, not only bringing conservatives back into this discussion, which has kind of become our secondary goal, but our primary goal is how do we get cross-partisan reforms that are economically strong and focused on markets and capitalism and innovation. And so it's been a really exciting ride, and that's kind of how I got there.
So in a nutshell, you know, the mission of the ACC is to bridge the political parties to work together to solve environmental issues, one of them obviously being climate change. Talk to me a little bit more about that.
Exactly. So when we started the organization, the most recent polling had showed that 36% of Republicans believed in climate change, but that when they were provided a market-based solution, that support jumped to 70% within conservatives believing in climate change. So it almost doubled. And so the problem with the partisanship of climate change didn't have to do with the issue of climate change. It had to do with the solutions that were being presented. And as we all know, as millennials, and in my case, Gen Z,
that's right.
We know that this is an issue that has serious consequences today. It's going to have even more serious consequences in the future. And we don't have time for partisanship. And so when we started the organization, we were covering a broad set of issues, and climate change was one of them, but not really a top priority. But over the past few years, climate change has become our number one priority because we see a huge opportunity for cross-partisan climate reforms. And, you know, to even just show you some of the progress that's been made that maybe people don't know about, first, the United States has led the world in lowering emissions for the past 13 years, largely because of the marketplace. So that provides an opportunity for even more rapid growth in terms of decreasing emissions. But on the political side, at the end of last year, 2020, we had Congress pass the most comprehensive climate plan in United States history. It doesn't do enough, but it's a huge, amazing start. And it was immensely bipartisan. And actually, to introduce the two co-introducers of the package were a Republican and a Democrat. So we're making immense progress. There was actually a summit that was reported by the Washington Examiner held in Utah a couple of weeks ago with 25 House Republicans flying out to Utah to talk about the future of the party on climate change. So the tide is shifting and the bipartisanship is ramping up. And we're finally getting there, and it's largely because of the work of our organization and our grassroots activists who have said, we're not ready for, you know, we're not going to be complicit and allow this partisanship on climate change to continue. We want reforms. We want them now. And to do that, you need economically strong ideas that can really appeal to both sides.
I love what you said about, you know, the tide's really turning for these kinds of issues. You know, the last year and change has kind of been nicknamed, you know, the year of the turning point. It was a turning point for racial equality in the Black Lives Matter movement in our country. It was a turning point, of course, politically. And, you know, it was even a turning point for corporations and every household as everyone adjusted to remote work, remote learning,
exactly,
and embrace their new normal amidst the pandemic. So I do think that this moment of time will be the turning point for climate change. And there's a lot of work to be done, and you can't do that work without a team. So kind of walk me through your team, the organization, when you know, you keep talking about all of these things and saying, we, who's we, who do you rely on to help make these changes?
Well, look, our organization, the American Conservation Coalition, and we have a partner. So the American Conservation Coalition is a 501c4 political advocacy and organization that can lobby and be a part of Capitol Hill conversations from a specific policy angle. We also have a partner nonprofit, a 501c3, called the Conservation Coalition. And both entities, both organizations, are focused on the same mission, which is providing market-based, limited government reforms to environmental issues. Now, the C3 is focused on education and changing the culture of environmentalism to one that is more economically friendly and more cross-partisan. And then the C4 is figuring out how to implement that work into specific policies. Our team has grown to nearly 15 people now, full-time staff. And then we have about 55 additional national team volunteers. And we have 300 branches, which are basically chapters across the country in 300 different communities. We believe that at the heart of every important changing of the tide, like you're talking about with the recent changes on racial justice, you know, if you even look back into when I was in high school, when, you know, gay marriage became legal, every single movement has been successful because of individuals on the grassroots level who have pushed to make a difference and have not shut up when they've been told to shut up, and they have continued to push. And that is the story of why ACC is so successful. Our national team is great, and our national team of volunteers is great. But what really makes us succeed is our grassroots members, which we have thousands of across the country over those few hundred chapters. And they are the ones who are constantly contacting their elected officials. They're constantly being better consumers in their day-to-day lives and pushing companies to do more. They are being political advocates. They are educating their friends. They are participating in our calls to action. We're building communities across the country of individuals who are willing to take a leap and be the brightest, most bold advocates for a cleaner future that is possible. And that can be done in so many ways. That can be done in the private sector, which I'm a huge fan of, entrepreneurship, either with a startup or even entrepreneurship within a big Fortune 500 company, figuring out how to reduce their environmental impact. Or it could be done at the local level, the state level, or the national level. But we have advocates pushing for change within all of those. And that's really what makes, you know, all the changes and all the historical tide shifting happen. And the only way that we're going to solve climate change is by grassroots activists raising their voice. We're not going to solve it by the news media reporting on it. We're not going to solve it by a couple of members of Congress being loud voices. We're not going to solve it by Hollywood talking about it. Those are all helpful. But what's most helpful is the grassroots activists that have changed the tide on so many different issues, who are doing it now on climate change, and they're doing it on behalf of our organization.
So let's talk about kind of the boots on the ground approach a little bit. You know, you guys have a much needed emphasis on environmental education on college campuses.
Yes.
And, you know, I was in college not too long ago, but, you know, longer than you. How do you find the kids on campus who care? Like, I know what I valued in college, and it's very different than the things that I value 13 years later.
Yeah, so one of the best ways to reach out to young people on these issues is to meet them where they're at and talk about the issues that they care about. That's been the problem with the environmental movement so far, is that by and large, it's kind of been this global problem that is kind of hard to grasp. It feels super negative. It feels like it's almost too tough to tackle, and that there's really no solution out there. And that, you know, you as an individual, it doesn't really matter unless there are a million more of you. And, you know, I hate that that's the mindset, because that's the same mindset that dictates elections. You know, people not showing up to vote because they think that their one voice doesn't matter. And, you know, in the scheme of life, yeah, your one vote or your one choice to buy sustainably or reach out to your congressman, yeah, that really actually on an individual level probably doesn't make that big of a difference. But it's the mindset that matters. And if you and, you know, your peers and their peers and their peers are having the same difference-making mindset in their individual lives, that makes a massive difference. And so that's what we're trying to do, is make these issues tangible to people, give them hope, give them inspiration, make them feel like they can be a part of the solution, because they are the solution. And that's kind of where ACC takes its grassroots to the next level. Now, we do a lot of campus work, but we also have done a lot of work. Really, our target demographic is under 40, because we feel like the folks in this country who are under 40 are the most passionate about environmentalism. And if you work within a company or you're on a college campus or you work in government, each one of them can have a huge impact. And so we have, you know, really widened our scope to past college campuses and really within high school, college, and the young professional network, because each one of those communities plays an important role in fighting this issue from an economic perspective, a political perspective, and from a different point of view. And the best way to do that is to make people feel like there's hope, make them feel like they can be a part of the difference, and make them feel like there is an issue that they can see or hear in their backyard, and feel like they can be a part of the change for that tangible issue that matters to them.
And so kind of pandering to the under 40 crowd, I mean, you're also curating like virtual lesson plans and a lot of speaking engagements and stuff on the Market Environmentalism Academy platform, which I think kind of
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Our Market Environmentalism Academy is an amazing resource. And so, you know, for a while, you know, we kept on hearing on college campuses and within young professional networks that, yeah, I really would love to act on this kind of new environmental movement that you guys are forming of economically sound reforms, but I don't even know what that looks like. And so this, on February 1st of 2021, we launched the Market Environmentalism Academy. And every month, we're launching two short but very high-quality courses on different topics relating to market environmentalism.
So what does that lesson plan kind of look like?
Yeah, so what it looks like is there's a 3 to 7 minute video with a well-respected talking head, you know, maybe a former elected official, newscaster, you know, what have you, business leader. And we're having those videos kind of be the opening of the course. It's kind of the 101 of whatever the course is, whether that's simply an introduction to free market environmentalism or a focus on nuclear energy or how sportsmen can play a role in conservation or whatever it might be. So we have a talking head. And then we have one pagers and policy reports that people can look through that are very easy to understand, fairly short, but also very, you know, quick and easy to get some really important information. Then we have quizzes to help kind of test the knowledge. And then we have the next course. and so there's kind of throughout the rest of our history or the rest of our future, we are going to continue pushing out these courses, especially on issues that are tangible to the time being. So one of the ones that's coming up is, you know, the Green New Deal versus a different climate change alternative. What does that look like? What are the flaws of the Green New Deal? And what are the pros of looking at an alternative? What does that alternative look like? And then having policy reports and one pagers on what those alternatives can look like, and then testing the knowledge and moving on to the next course. That's kind of how the Market Environmentalism Academy works. And then we provide really cool perks for the people who participate with really cool swag. And throughout the year, you're able to kind of come to our fly-ins nationally. We help pay for different activism in your communities. And it's a really great opportunity to be kind of in our top echelon of people on the ground.
I have a couple, you know, a few more questions before we get to playing our rapid fire game. And I'd be remiss if I didn't take the opportunity. Climate change is such a huge issue.
Yes.
And you guys have obviously focused on smaller solutions so that inch by inch we can get where we need to go. What are some of those smaller solutions for somebody who may not take the time to write letters or start campaigns for elected officials, but what is something that I can wake up and do tomorrow?
It's a really good question. So to me, there are three ways that you can be best to be the best advocate for climate change reform in your personal life. One is with your company that you work for. One is as a consumer, and the other is on the political stage. In your company and as a consumer, it's pretty straightforward. You push, you know, the corporate world to be better through your purchasing behavior, through your advocacy within your own organization and company, and so on and so forth. In the political realm, which is kind of where people think about climate change the most, but I really do want to hammer on the importance of that private sector leadership. In the political realm, the best thing you can do is to raise your voice with your elected official. Because this might come as a surprise, but despite how loud the environmental movement is, it is very rare that a member of Congress or a state legislator ever hears from their constituents on the issue of environmental protection. They see it on social media, kind of generally, they see it on the streets, they see it on the news, but they don't hear it in their inboxes, they don't see the letters, they don't get the calls. And I have been told by so many members of Congress that if they even receive 5 or 6 calls from their voters, they would be willing to change their mind on an issue. And that's the way that our generation needs to change its activism. We need to take it from the streets and turn it into some tangible action on the policy level. You don't need to know everything about the policies. You simply need to tell your elected official that they need to act on climate change. If you have more specifics, great. But they need to hear your voice just generally on the issue to make them feel like there is some pressure and potentially some great support if they do the right thing. Now, what that can look like in the short term, because we need to get the ball rolling on solutions in this country fairly quickly, is to start investing in the innovation and technology that will get these ideas off the ground. And again, this isn't just at the federal level. There's a lot of important action that has to happen at the state level. But whether that's modernizing our energy grid or investing in battery storage so that we can actually use solar and wind to fight climate change, or putting more nuclear plants on the ground, or supporting carbon capture technologies to take carbon out of the atmosphere and put it back into the ground. There are so many different technologies that will help us solve this issue that just quite aren't there yet. And to do that, we need to be able to advocate for America's leadership, or your state's leadership, or your community's leadership on that technology, investing in it, deploying it, and making it happen. And a lot of times that's investments straight from the government. A lot of times it's a public-private partnership. And a lot of times that is simply from the private sector leading the way.
I'm kind of in, not in shock, but I'm, you know, when you break it down to its most granular level of how you could help, it does seem a lot easier. And I'm just listening to you and I'm, you know, I can hear your passion. Have you ever faced any challenges or roadblocks because of your age when trying to enact big change? I mean, you are one of the most eloquent guests I've ever had on the show, by far the youngest, and so inspiring. Has anyone ever said, you know, go away, leave us alone, you're too young, you don't know what you're talking about?
Unfortunately, yes. I want to start, you know, answering that by saying I think my age has been a very helpful tool. And I don't want to play the victim card of saying, you know, I've just been shut down because of my age. I actually think the age aspect has really helped me. And a lot of people have believed in me and our organization and our team of young people because we are young, up-and-coming leaders, and we have an opportunity to make a difference, and we're educated, and we breed more exciting people across this country who fit within our mold. But there is a lot of skepticism in older communities, especially in politics, where the old people think that they know best, and they find a way to try to squash you, to try to end you. And that might sound dramatic, but it's not. You know,
no, I mean, look at Greta, you know, and all
exactly.
The people. Exactly. I stalked your Instagram and I saw that you met her. I'm so jealous.
I testified at Congress with her back in the fall of 2019, which was an immense honor. And she and I don't agree on everything. But as young people, we support each other because we know that we have the same goal in mind. And that's not always the case between other generations. Unfortunately, what I've been able to be exposed to over the past few years of my activism and our organization's been exposed to, it's a lot of older people who feel like they deserve to be in the place that they are, and that young people are a threat because the same old way of thinking is being challenged. And the same old way of thinking is why they have influential positions, why they're paid a lot of money, and why they have an opportunity to be in powerful places. And because they have those powerful places, they have an opportunity to squash the young people who are in their way, no matter how eloquent or how passionate or how morally equipped the younger generation is. And I have found that to be a serious problem, specifically in the last few months. And I, you know, it's perceived as a threat to the people who have been a part of the problem for a very long time and are reaping the benefits from being a part of the problem. And anybody that's trying to solve things and kind of change the status quo and change the tide, as we've talked about so many times, is again perceived a threat. And the only way to change that is time, and also more young people standing up and saying, you know, the money and power that you have doesn't match the power and passion of the younger generation.
So, like I said, when I'm doing prep for these interviews, you know, I obviously do a Google search and I comb through some literature on the guest, but because we are close in age, I was just doing, like I said, I stalked your Instagram and I did a deep sure. dive on your social media. So I already knew that you did not have a TikTok, nor were you TikTok dancing. But there was a post on your Instagram that really struck me. You posted like branded text slides with 7 things we need to solve climate change. And number 6 on the list was consumerism, which is literally what this podcast is about. You hear it in the intro. People using their purchasing power for good. People purchasing sustainably. So I want to talk about what are some of your sustainable staples? What are, you know, some companies and some products that you stand behind that our listeners can then go buy to make an impact with their dollar if they're not quite ready to, you know, hop on the front lines?
Well, that's a really great question. It's one that I could talk for hours about, but I'll give you a few.
Yeah, just pick three.
Yeah. So I'll pick three examples of the ways that I think about this in my day-to-day life. I still drive a gas, you know, powered car, oil-powered car, which I would like to change soon, but I'm young and I don't have enough money to buy a Tesla or an electric car right now. The second is I drink a lot of tea, enough to make a pretty big impact on the environment. And the third is I also have to travel a lot for work on an airplane. So let me just walk you through what I do in those three situations. When I'm driving my oil-powered car, I've done research on which oil companies are doing the most for reducing their environmental footprint. Now, I'm not saying that I endorse the oil and gas community to be a part of our society for the rest of our lives or our kids' or grandkids' lives. But where we are today is we still use these, you know, technologies or these energy sources. And we have a duty to support the companies that are trying to do the most to offset their impact. And so for me, what I've found is Shell and BP are actually doing a lot in their business capacities to do that. So when I fill up my gas tank, I try to go to Shell and BP. When I drink tea, tea is not as bad on the environment as coffee, but it takes a lot of water. And then, of course, there's a lot of waste if you're drinking it a lot. And it's a very plastic-intensive thing if you're going to Starbucks every day. So I make 4 liters of tea every night before I go to bed in an iced tea maker at my house. And I buy tea bags from companies that do it ethically and sustainably and find ways to be net zero in their water waste. And I try to change it around with different companies across the globe, but specifically and ideally here in the United States. And that's how I help in that part of my life. And then on airlines, I try to support the airline companies that are doing the most to offset their impact and look towards the future on how they can innovate their way out of this issue and find ways to be the least environmentally impactful that they can be. And for me, that's supporting a company like Delta and offsetting my carbon footprint when I fly. Even though it's not perfect, it does take a huge step in the right direction to offset your carbon footprint when you fly. And a lot of times it can be between $5 and $10 for just one round trip. So those are just some easily applicable ways, and you can do that in so many aspects of your life.
Okay. So before I let you get back to, you know, solving all the world's problems and bridging the gap and everything else that you do while you're drinking your tea, I did want to play our rapid fire game with you. And I'm going to rattle off 10 quick questions and you just say the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
Yep.
Number one, if you could play any sport professionally, what would you play and why?
Football, because I am the world's biggest Packers fan. And there's nothing that I would rather do than run on the Packers football field with a loud Lambeau field. That's just a goal of mine that is not going to be achieved in this lifetime, but maybe the next one.
Well, aren't you excited then that Aaron Rodgers is engaged to Shailene Woodley, who is such an environmentalist?
Yes. And Aaron Rodgers has actually been very outspoken about kind of the forest fire issue in California, right, where he has spent some time. I think he's a great advocate for these issues, and Shailene's been amazing, especially on ocean issues. So it's an environmental power couple, and one that I'm a huge fan of both of them, and it's the perfect storm for me. And I'm one of the biggest Aaron Rodgers fans I know and it's almost gotten to a creepy level at times, and I probably shouldn't say that, but I just love Aaron Rodgers and Shailene Woodley and the Packers. And there's anything I'd do to run on that football field and be teammates with Aaron Rodgers. It's something about Wisconsin sports teams that really gets us to be crazy about it.
What was the last concert you went to?
The last concert I went to was the Cold War Kids.
What does your morning routine look like?
My morning routine is different every day, if I'm being completely honest, which is part of the thing that I'm trying to change. But my ideal morning routine is to wake up not 5 minutes before my first call in the morning, which oftentimes happens, especially if I've been up late working. And ideally, it's waking up, taking a shower, cooking some eggs, making some avocado toast, and then getting right on that grind.
So my next question, I've never done this before. I actually stole this question from your Twitter. If you could live in any time period other than right now, when would you want to live and why?
I love that question, and I didn't answer it myself on Twitter, so I'm glad.
I know, that's why I'm curious.
So I would live in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, because there were a lot of really important social movements happening that I would have wanted to be a part of. And I really like the fact that at that point in time, you were able to drive a car or go on an airplane, or you were able to kind of communicate with people across the globe, but you weren't so addicted to technology as we are today. And the world is a little bit slower. And so while the world is getting better in terms of social causes, it also was focused a little bit more on individuals and person-to-person connection. And I think we've lost that. You know, it's something that I've been trying to get better at in my day-to-day life, is kind of disconnecting from the technology for a little bit. But it is really hard, especially with our addictions to it that we are really afraid to confront. And I think at that point in time, you were still able to communicate with people, see people over the holidays that lived across the country, but you also were able to really sit down and connect with other people.
So my next question goes right into our technology addiction. What are you binge watching right now? Or what's the last show that you were watching that you liked?
Well, so I haven't binge watched a show in a year and a half until the last couple of weeks. So perfect timing. I've started Westworld.
Okay. That's a classic.
I love it.
Tell me one of your more memorable Halloween costumes.
My girlfriend was really giving me a hard time about this. I dressed up as a plant and put the words nuclear and hazard on my chest, and I was trying to be a nuclear plant, and that is about as embarrassing as it gets, but I did do that. So you might as well tell the worst one, which is the most memorable one.
So do you ever like take a break and get to be a kid? Like, what does a typical Saturday look like for you?
Well, until late 2020, my typical Saturday was working the whole day. And I've realized that my personal time is more important and that I will burn out if I don't have that. And I think as a society, we've kind of encouraged people to work all the time, and that the more you work, the better off you are. And I've found that now it's quite the opposite. I hit kind of a breaking point in my personal life where it was kind of a decision between working all the time and kind of losing your livelihood, or working a lot and also finding time for yourself. And so now my Saturdays are skiing or hiking. They're spent going to farmers markets or doing things that are relaxing, and watching college basketball at this point in time. So I've been trying to take more time off, and I would, you know, especially since the listeners of the show and this podcast are people who are, I'm sure, very hard workers and probably listening to this podcast to figure out how to become more efficient and better stewards of our environment in their day-to-day lives. I would say that the best thing you can do to be a steward is actually to be a steward of your own personal life and to take control and take time for yourself, because life's too short to not remember any moment because you're going through the motions every single day. And I'm grateful to have realized that in my early 20s, because I lost a few years of my life, in all honesty, from working too much, too hard. And building back those personal relationships has been one of the greatest honors of my life over the past, you know, 6 to 9 months.
What do you think your most impactful social media platform is, and why do you think that is?
Twitter, because it is informal and you can get out ideas very quickly. And however, it also can be the worst platform, but I try to use it for good. And I think more people should try to use it for good.
What is one food that you could eat over and over again and not get sick of it?
Blueberries.
I don't know why I wasn't expecting that.
That's a real answer.
Totally. And lastly, and most importantly, what does success mean to you?
Success 3 years ago meant growing my professional life as quickly and as rapidly as possible. Today, success for me means having a healthy balance of living my life, enjoying my life, having great memories with friends and family, and also making a difference in the world, because we're only here for anywhere from 0 to 100 years. And making a difference and making your impact on those around you, as well as the globe at large, is all you can really do to, in my opinion, have a successful life. But that doesn't just mean professionally you make a difference. It also means in your personal life, you invest in relationships and have a good balance.
So now's the time where we shamelessly plug, you know, where can people learn more about you and all of the great stuff that you guys have going on?
Well, our website is acc.eco. So instead of .com, we decided to to go to .eco, so acc.eco. We're on social media on all networks at ACC_national, and I believe we even have a TikTok. I don't even know if I signed off on that, but I believe we have one. And then I'm on all social medias except for TikTok at Benji Backer on social media. And we, you know, for any listeners who are interested in joining our movement, we need more advocates. We need more people to give us ideas. We need to hear your stories of entrepreneurship. We want to talk about them. And we also want you to be a part of making a difference through our organization. And you can do that best at our website, acc.eco/membership.
Amazing. Benji, thank you so much for coming on here. I mean, you know, from a millennial to a Gen Z, we're all just trying to inspire the next generation of change. And I'm really excited for you and all the work that you're doing. And I can't wait to follow your career. So thank you again for coming on.
Well, this is one of my favorite discussions I've had in a while, and really appreciate the questions and excited to see how this turns out and to stay in contact over the months and years to come.